Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We are reviewing week two, and we have many, many things to talk about, despite believing that coming into week two, we would have very little to talk about. As usual, we were incorrect. Upsets, near upsets, mediocrity, excellence, the entire bouillabaisse that you have come to expect from a weekend of college football, all present here joining us. The introductions are repetitive but necessary. I am Spencer Hall, editor at large for SB Nation and creator and editor of Every Day Should Be Saturday.
Can we make joining that editor at 200 to 700 pounds?
Editor, yes, editor at questionably large.
Yeah, editor at Old Navy large.
Editor at vaguely large.
Old Navy large, which may fit anything from small pot-bellied pig to tapir. It could fit anything in between. Joining me from Kennesaw, Georgia, hey, Jason Kirk, editor of our college football side at SB Nation. What were you doing yesterday?
Well, I was watching the end of Texas Tech, Arizona State. That was when college football started yesterday, right? That was all
yep.
I saw.
Yep, that's all you saw. Every game involves giving up 400 rushing yards.
Yep. Yeah, we did a little coverage experiment. We mentioned it on the last podcast, but I sat out this Saturday, took one for the team, wanted to be there, had no intention of being anywhere else. But you know, we just to try this out, we would let the young folks run the show for a Saturday. I went to a music festival that happened to be Dungeon Family Reunion. They happened to bring out Bone Crusher and Killer Mike and T.I. and Erykah Badu. I endured that. That's fine.
Couple questions I'm going to ask them real quick. One, they had everyone present for Liberation, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Did you cry?
No, I'm going to be real honest. I don't remember the last time I cried. I almost cried during Black Ice. I've seen that song. I've seen him do it three times now. This one, I don't know. It almost got me. I almost cried in public. Black Ice when during Andre's verse, which is probably my favorite 30 seconds of music ever. But that was the closest I got.
Okay, that's great. That's not college football, but I'm glad you did it. Ryan, Nanny, joining us from beautiful Brooklyn, New York. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fine. I didn't do any of that. I sat on a couch next to Dan Rubenstein, and we watched. I mean, is it wrong that I look at what happened on Saturday and I say, yeah, there was a lot of exciting games? That's because a lot of teams played like shit.
Question, yeah. Ryan. When you sat down next to Dan and you watched Kentucky play football, did you cry?
No. It was. I mean. Why would I cry at something that's been happening for 29 years? Like, that's like saying, you know those people who are like, oh, every day is a blessing. Like, you can't live that way because you just sort of have to establish your bare minimum and take life's ups and downs from there. And Florida's bare minimum is beating Kentucky. Bad years, good years, doesn't matter. We beat Kentucky.
Did you not, though? Okay, now I will tell you this. You and I, we're at this point, we've developed an adult allergy. You know, when somebody accidentally just becomes randomly provoked by the presence of watermelon.
I think of this as a protective exoskeleton we've developed, but I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
Sure. We've got a callus, okay? Mm-hmm. And that callus has been worn thick and hard against the notion of hope that anything will ever change or improve.
Yeah.
It's a protective instinct, and I think a really good one. However, watching Florida play Kentucky, yes, in the 3:30 slot on CBS with Vernon Gary, because it was that kind of really.
It was that kind of scheduling week for the SEC.
Yeah, it was not a good one. But watching Florida, actually, this is the thing. If you're a good team, you will not only beat bad teams, you will annihilate them in a surgical fashion. And this is one of the first times, like maybe since the Ole Miss game last year, when I can say, this was clinical. This wasn't even personal. Florida ran the ball.
It's very bad.
I know. Against a deplorable Kentucky team. But all I can ask of you is that you take a very bad team and you don't let them make you look very bad. And Florida, fingers crossed, and I am cursing the wrath of an angry God that hates me and wants me dead. But Florida looked okay. They looked okay.
big stuff.
I mean, they looked more than okay. They had as many interceptions as Kentucky.
Brian, what are you doing?
No, what are you doing? Kentucky might just be ass. Kentucky might just be a hot.
Oh man, that Kentucky team is.
Yeah, but what was it? What, 45-7? That's what happens when ass runs into okay.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you say that, but Florida struggled with UMass, which literally is ass.
Yeah, okay. UMass is good.
Okay. I guess when you combine Miami and ass, you get UMass. UMass is not
good. I'm sorry. Now, was this the game? I saw some tweets. Vern was like just openly bored with this game.
He basically asked for stories. He said, if you could just email some stories in.
This sounds like the 1980s Braves broadcast on TBS, where whichever Ip Perry, I can't remember which one, would just openly trashing the Braves and their sponsors and just.
Hey, Don. Let's go to, hey, Don Sutton, why don't you tell us about your favorite motels in St. Louis and the St. Louis metropolitan area? Yeah.
It was bad. Vern was on air saying, oh, if anybody can send me illegal streaming links to the new Star Trek movie, or even Independence Day resurgence, I'll take it.
Who's got the link to the CM Punk fight?
That at least was short, Kentucky.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, that was over in 2 minutes.
It was as competitive but brief.
Let us praise a few people and say a couple of things about people who look really good. Luke Del Rio. You look good, man. You threw for 320 yards. I didn't know we had that many yards.
Yeah, Luke Del Rio threw a lot of deep balls that, you know how. There are a lot of college football quarterbacks who are like, I should throw the deep ball because that's a thing. And then it's just like, all right, well, the deep part you got, not so much the where it was supposed to go or catchable or anywhere in bounds. Luke Del Rio actually has a little bit of touch when he throws the ball downfield.
He does. I was stunned. By the way, did you react like I did when you saw a competent deep ball, which was on the couch, bolt up and say, what is that?
Yeah, it was weird. It was real weird.
Yeah, I was stunned. I didn't know that was legal.
Yeah. We're going to talk. Are we really going to talk this much about this game? It just seems unseemly.
This is a Kentucky football podcast. Hi, if you're just now joining us, each week we gather to talk for 1 hour about the latest Kentucky game.
Welcome to Blue Bayou.
Blue
Bayou. Why is the bayou in the name? I'm not sure. It was just the most popular term.
We're BBN here. I just gotta get this off my chest. Mitch Barnhart and Mark Stoops, they're out of excuses. They're out of time.
We need to get
Coach Cal in here to take over this program.
That might be true. I want to play a quick game of who does Kentucky play in the immediate future. Coming up, they are probably gonna get their first win against New Mexico State. So that's fun.
Probably. New Mexico State, the best team in New Mexico. Yeah, they did beat New Mexico, and I couldn't believe that.
I hedged for a reason, believe me. But then we have what is going to be, if you're looking for a, where did it all go wrong for Mark Stoops? What was the first nail in the coffin? Because I don't think it's the Florida game. The Florida game might just end up being, Florida's better than people thought this year. And again, no Kentucky coach has beat Florida in the last 30 years, in case you missed that. That's 3-0.
Wouldn't that be a loss to Southern Miss? It really sort of started this spiral?
Yeah, the Southern Miss one, but let me
Yeah,
let
the,
me give
the
you
coffin
this.
Could have about 9 nails in it.
Let me give you
there's
this.
A lot of, there's a lot of nails in this coffin, man.
Week four.
If you want to pin a Stoops down, you're going to need more than 2 nails.
Week four at home, Kentucky plays South Carolina.
You.
No, now I'm morbidly curious.
Yeah. 6-5.
Yeah. I think, I mean, if Mark Stoops loses that game, that means he's 1-3, assuming they beat New Mexico State, before they go on the road to Alabama.
Good God, why is that? Why are they doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Saban was already mad about having to play one team from Kentucky.
Are there any two in-state rivals so far apart right now as Kentucky and Louisville?
Can I just one quick recommendation for Kentucky? Please. Don't go to that game. Just don't
go. Which one? Be more specific.
That yeah, makes I literally don't know. Bama or Louisville? If you can only sit out one, which one do you sit out?
Bama. No, don't go. Yeah. No, that's going
to
hurt.
Definitely don't travel to that game. Don't go to Tuscaloosa to watch Kentucky get its head caved in.
No. I'm telling the team not to go.
I thought this was now, a people fan will say, thing. Okay.
No,
of course. They were out in week one.
Bartleby the Wildcat. I would prefer not to, Alabama.
Yeah, that's it. This isn't a forfeit. I can't help what my decisions are going to become in other people's hands.
Sure.
I just think in order to assert yourself against the arbitrary whims of the universe, your only ally is will. And in this case, you need to have the will to just say, I'm going to skip the Alabama trip, pocket the savings, and pass them on to you, Kentucky fan. Hey, man, okay?
Abstinence-only education doesn't have to just be about sex.
No, you can just decide not to go to Alabama. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part about this, it would probably damage Alabama's strength of schedule irreparably.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that
would
damage...
They got one free game.
They got one free game. Remember, the only thing that could damage your strength of schedule worse than playing one of the worst Kentucky teams I've ever seen is not playing them.
Wow.
Brilliant. Now,
is some war game shit.
Damn.
Would you like to play a game?
Would you like to play UK? Yes. Yes, I would. Bomb the hell out of them.
Yeah, why don't you just listen? If we just sub out.
Damn, Matthew Broderick threw for 380 on Kentucky. He's old.
Louisville is the other program in the state of Kentucky, yeah. And if you were home Friday night, I hope you watched Lamar Jackson play football because I would like to read you his statistics. I don't care who he's playing, by the way. I don't. Because I will tell you the other runner in the backfield had 156 yards. That's pretty amazing. He didn't have four TDs, though. He didn't have 199 yards on the ground from the QB spot. He did not, in fact, hurdle a defender on the way to the end zone, which he pretty much just waltzed into at least twice. I mean, waltzed, as in a beautifully timed classical dance step. He also passed for 411 yards and a TD. Lamar Jackson is not human right now. Not in any sense of the word.
And as
not
as,
at all.
As you mentioned on Saturday, it could have been more.
It could have been way more.
His receivers dropped, what, like 8 passes?
His receivers fumbled at least twice and dropped, like, I think, I can count, like, in my head, they dropped at least 4 passes that would have gone for, like, 150 yards. Like, big plays. They were not nickel and diming against Syracuse. They were heaving the ball downfield. This is, without playing full games, by the way, and taking a breather early, at this point, Lamar Jackson is, the phrase video game numbers is a cliche, but no, this is with you on easy setting. When you've gotten the dynasty on NCAA 5 or 6 years in, and you can just take the pick of the litter and then cheat by making them your bonus player, right, who has 99s and everything. Right now, he's thrown for 7 TDs against 1 pick. He's got 697 yards passing. Okay, that's impressive all by itself. But no, there's more. Because in addition to that, God, this is ridiculous. He's got 318 yards rushing in 2 games and 6 TDs. He's a running back and a quarterback all by himself. And that's including the profile of running quarterback. It's nuts. And I want to tell you, too, Syracuse did not play that badly. They really didn't. Louisville's potentially terrifying right now.
I think my favorite stat, probably my favorite stat for the whole season, I can't imagine anything topping this, is he sat out the whole second half of the Charlotte game, and ha ha ha, yes, it's Charlotte. Well, okay, hang on, I'll get to that in a second. So in his first 60 minutes of the season, he put up 13 touchdowns. The only team to come anywhere near that in its first 60 minutes was Ohio State, which had 11. Ohio State has 110 people. Lamar Jackson is one. And, you know, you can say, well, the competition. Well, okay, he's played 2 FBS teams. Yes, believe it or not, Syracuse is an FBS. Some teams have played FCS teams.
Man, we haven't
He has played harder competition than half the country has. And these are the numbers. He could probably sit out 2 weeks and still be the touchdowns leader. I think he's clinched the September Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, if you
Yeah,
if you do not get the chance to watch him, change your life. Alter something. Quit a job.
I mean, you are
Go watch him right now.
You are going to get the chance to watch him this week.
Coming up soon.
We will, but we'll talk about that later in the week. Hey, can I share with you the saddest...
How long did we talk about Kentucky before Ryan breaks us off subject? Looks like 17 minutes. Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
I want to talk to you about the saddest thing that happened. The saddest group pair, the saddest pair of people from this weekend in college football. I'm going to let you both guess, and I already know you're going to be wrong. Who do you think the saddest pair of people were this Saturday in
the
college
saddest
football?
The saddest pair?
Yeah.
Vern and Gary. Now we're talking about Kentucky.
They
again.
Were bored. They weren't sad.
Oh.
Sad. I'm going to go Gary Patterson.
Okay.
And
the twin he absorbed in the womb that still lives. Yes, that's a good guess as well.
Quato.
Yeah. Quato. No. Here's the saddest pair of people in college football this weekend. Northwestern played... Northwestern played Illinois State at home. Northwestern lost to Illinois State by the score of 9-7. I'm on the ESPN page for this game right now, and the first video in their carousel has the following caption. Northwestern fan gets proposed to on the field.
Oh.
And there is a picture of the woman who was proposed to holding the screaming slash home aloneing her face with her hands. And if you take it only in the context of she just got engaged, you're like, she's happy. But then if you just look a little bit up on this webpage and you see Illinois State 9, Northwestern 7, you're like, no, she's not. No, she's not. Look, Northwestern losing to Illinois State is something Northwestern fans have to carry with them forever. And look, obviously Florida has its own version of this game and you can't escape it. It is shingles. It lives inside you, even if it's dormant.
Flares up.
But you know,
especially if you get near FSU Twitter.
But you know what? You know what I didn't do during the Florida Georgia Southern game? You know what Spencer didn't do? You know what most Florida fans didn't do? Tie that game to one of supposedly the happiest, most connected moments in your personal life. Like
no,
these
what were you doing? What were you doing during that game?
I was not watching it. I was in the office, not watching it, and not getting engaged.
Yeah, you know what I was doing?
What?
I was doing maybe the most appropriate thing for any Florida fan to do. I was drinking hard and doing shots of doubles in Stillwater, Oklahoma. That's perfect. It came on, and I was like, "Okay, pouring it. Let's do this."
But if you know these two people, if they're out there, please send me their registry. I feel obligated to buy them a wedding gift, assuming they go forward with it, because I would not blame you if you said, yeah, we got engaged on the day that Northwestern lost to Illinois State, and I feel like that's a sign that this is not a thing we should do, not right now.
And I would point out the Big Ten overall had a pretty decent week. We don't get to bag on them yet as hard as we did the SEC in week one.
Right,
because
Pitt's a Big Ten team, right?
It is now. Maryland's out.
Let's agree. Bye. Let's agree that Pitt has a Big Ten coach. He just may know it yet.
He's got an Italian name. He's got a Big Ten haircut.
Everyone kind of hates him.
Like, their entire playbook is just interesting runs.
Yeah, but they had to go to the SEC to get a quarterback.
The ultimate shame.
Not like the SEC was doing anything with him.
No, you put him out on the curb.
Yeah.
For you to go to home. Pat Narduzzi was like, "You look cold, puppy. You want to come inside?
You want to hand off a little?
You want to hand it off a little? Good boy. Good boy.
Bring it here. Give it back. Good.
That's good. Give it back. No, not over there.
Dogs don't throw. Dogs don't throw.
Don't throw it. Don't throw it. Yeah. Nathan Peterman threw 3 TDs. Didn't get over 100 yards passing, but that's fine because when you got James Conner and Quadri Henderson working behind you, good things are going to happen. Pitt. Hail
to Pitt.
To Pitt. It was Spillimus, indeed. Because Pitt beats Penn State 42-39. And my favorite thing about this, and it is grand, and I was guilty of it. And I don't know if guilty is the right word. Complicit. I was definitely complicit. Complicit, by the way, Penn State fans, you should look that up.
Wow.
And we're going to get letters. Great. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. My.
Somehow.
Woo! So, but yeah.
Again, those go to bud.elliot.
Scott Paterno has just tweeted.
yeah.
Family statement coming in.
By Mark Reisman on onwardstate.com. Penn State deserves a better rival than Pitt.
Oh, Jesus Christ, this was amazing. Two days before the game, Pitt, in its current state, is not a worthy rival for Penn State. Its current state is Pennsylvania, in which it is the best college football team at the moment. So,
I'm just going to share a few highlights. But right now, any rivalry with Pitt feels one-sided.
Yeah, it kind of does.
And it does. It does right now. Certainly. Here, this is the other thing. This is my favorite sentence. Again, while history isn't everything, to beat a school like Penn State, which has only had 5 losing seasons since World War II, and to play a team with 5 losing seasons since 2005, makes it feel like a win this week would be par for the course, and a loss, while embarrassing, would do nothing to prove Pitt is the better program.
might need to check the theorems, check the calculations there.
I mean, I don't have a prestigious Big Ten degree, sir, but I think watching your defensive line get knocked 3 feet in the dirt by Pitt's O-line for most of the game and be unable to defend a simple fly sweep out of the slot, that's a trend.
Look,
I'm just going to, it's the start of a trend.
Look, I know we're not looking ahead, and I know we already did this with Kentucky, but if you want a rival to talk about for Penn State, you just got to wait a week. They get to get that revenge matchup against Temple.
Rutgers is right there.
What's your recent Maryland series, Penn State? Is it like 1-1?
Oh, God.
I know that's been a competitive rivalry as of late. Lots of options.
I'm going to be feel so conflicted when Penn State goes to Michigan on September 24th at this point.
Yeah. Are they still honoring Joe Paterno before the Temple game?
It's still on the schedule.
Still on the schedule? Okay. I'm not saying this fact. Still doing that. Okay. Cool.
Was it the Purdue game? Who knows?
Yeah.
Purdue,
who also lost this week. God bless him.
Not important.
Daryl Hazel's on that 8-year plan, but hey, congratulations to Tommy Tuberville. You didn't give Purdue that scalp.
Spencer, I'm going to ask you a question that specifically preys on Jason's absence for most of the Saturday. What is the one game that Jason or anybody else who didn't watch it just wouldn't understand based on just the final score?
I have several.
Yeah.
One, TCU Arkansas.
Okay.
And how it happened.
Yeah.
Because if I just showed you the score, 41-38, you'd say, shootout. Nope. Not how this happened.
It's a shootout where each side had several gun jams. Several prolonged.
I believe that's called a shoot-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a game that was decided in large part by two huge haymakers thrown at the end, a blocked field goal, and an OT series where, by the way, we get to OT because Arkansas, this is why they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because they just kind of hate everything, and it's glorious. They're just big, fat, mean, and they're smart asses. Like, Brett Bielema is a complete smart ass, and that's really fun to watch because for the 2-point conversion, Austin Allen hands off to the running back, and the running back, like, it's on this crazy, like, reverse, right? Or an end around on the moat. Like, you have to watch it. It's not a play that you would be looking at and call an obvious 2-point conversion play. Normally, those are, like, good, like, run pass option or sort of, like, quick, you know, pass that the defense isn't quite ready for. Nope. This is like end around trick play. They throw to Austin Allen for the 2-point conversion. It's clearly designed to just piss you off. That's it. It wasn't designed because, oh, it works. Yeah, it might work.
Oh, yeah. None of it was like, this is this gives us our best chance. Nope. It was just, this is the thing that will stick in your eye the longest.
Hey, yo, watch this. It'll burn. You'll be so mad about this.
Hold on. I'm going to stick this switchblade in vinegar real quick.
That's the best part about watching Arkansas play, is that you get the idea that Brett Bielema wants people to look back at the game tape and just get madder.
Yeah.
To just watch it and say, "Dawg! Did you have to?" Yeah, he had to. He absolutely had to. He and Jim Harbaugh have that in common.
That's a hell of a football team over there, and the wounds won't close. I made sure of that.
I respect them so much, I made sure to maim them.
I sewed an explosive inside their stomach.
Yeah.
I went ahead and tattooed myself on their hind parts.
Woo pig.
It's beautiful. Their wives will really appreciate it. Be the most beautiful thing they've ever seen in their bedroom. That is exactly what this game was like. And like Gary Patterson. Gary Patterson's going to be mad about this game for the next decade.
Oh, but then you've left out that it wasn't as simple as Arkansas has this crazy 2-point conversion. No,
this is like this is an 8-part saga.
Yeah. What happened next, Spencer?
So they have this 2-point conversion, right? And Kevontae Turpin, who you should not kick to. And this is again why Arkansas is really likable.
Yeah.
Hmm? Yeah, don't kick to him. It's dumb. Don't kick to him because he's brilliant. He's awesome. He had 126 yards receiving. He was electric. He had at least 136 yards in kick returns alone. And he returns punts. He's like 155 pounds and he's just built of like discount lightning. He's amazing. And they kick the ball to him because Arkansas, in addition to being the kind of like super antagonistic, brawny, mean football team, sometimes they're not that bright, which is one of the things that makes them really charming. They just kick the ball to Kevontae Turpin because they're like, yeah, we can defend that. Oh, shit, we can't. They get the ball into field goal position. And then Ryan, how do they manage to block this field goal? With what tool and implement do they do this?
Oh, they bring out nature's most awesome and terrifying athlete, the tall lineman. The tall lineman reaches up.
Is this the 6'10 guy?
Yeah.
Dan Skipper.
Yeah.
They bring out Dan Skipper, who you saw last year being shoved down for a penalty by Robert Condici. Dan Skipper, who is 6'10", 319, pure Coloradan muscle, goes out there and blocks the thing. And when they show Dan Skipper, Twitter lit up because they showed him on the sidelines, and it was instantly full of people going, yeah, that dude is 40. No way he's not 40.
Listen, he's sending back money to home. It's fine. He's just trying to settle down, put a little something away for the grandkids.
Like he's never stopped growing.
Yeah,
essentially. And just very, very, very slowly.
Right.
When he's 50, he'll be 6'11".
No, like this is Brett Bielema is like the Hagrid of college football. Like, you're an exotic and a huge beast. Mm-hmm. You should come live with me. But yeah, that's how they managed to block it, is with a 6'10" dude. And the poor freshman kicker, imagine this, TCU's freshman kicker rolls out to do this, and he looks up and he sees a 40-year-old, like...
kicked it into a tree. He kicked it into a damn tree.
He sees a 40-year-old Game of Thrones character, like a Russian mafia enforcer.
He kicked it into an int.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're this freshman kicker who weighs, 160 pounds, and you kick it into an int. You can't blame me. That's 6'10". How am I going to kick? How am I going to kick over Dwight Howard?
Got to hook it.
Yes, that's it. I gotta take this like a Messi taking a free kick, man. I gotta
You take like a sand wedge, I think.
Yeah,
You gotta sort of lay it flat. Really,
you gotta chip it over him.
You're not even trying to hit the ball. You're just trying to get under the ball.
Like, if you have someone that tall, I think you should be legally permitted in football to
kick off a platform.
Or pump fake. You should be able to pump fake with the leg, like,
Oh, man.
Stutter step.
That could go on all night.
That could go, we should have a clock on it, right? 5 seconds?
Right.
So maybe you do, like, it's a, you know, like you go to a basketball game and there's like the line of dudes jumping off trampolines and they're throwing the ball back and you never know which one's going to actually dunk it. So you just have a row of kickers and they're all taking fake swings and until he gets tired.
You just do it like like you do on kickoffs where one guy runs up and takes the fake kick at it.
Yeah, the old fake onside kick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have like four people blocking. Right. That'll be fine.
Yeah, this was a whale of a game though. It was pretty good, and then the finale just ramped up to ludicrous. So well done by both teams. Like both teams are fun to watch. I liked TCU. They kind of pissed away a lot of their chances in the first half in this and came back to bite them in the ass. But both fun teams. I have like early season, I'm pretty much like I am with dogs. You're like, that's a good dog. That's a real good dog too. You're Kentucky.
It pissed a little bit, but it's new. It's okay.
It'll learn.
That's what good dogs do.
That's a good dog. You'll get it. Here's a treat anyway. Yeah. Unless you're Kentucky. And I'm like, that's a bad dog. You need to send that to a farm.
Sad dog. It's different.
Sad. The saddest dog. Anyone, by the way, Ryan, that you look at and you go, oh man, before this goes over the horizon, please let us praise the fine work done by this team. And or person.
This is going to be weird.
Because you know, like the last 10 minutes of this podcast, reserved for hating. That's all we're going to do. Is absolutely hate on everybody who underachieved and just laid an egg.
Is it okay that I don't have anything meaningful to say here, but Wake Forest is 2-0.
Yeah! The Deeks!
can I ask you, can I just, if the viewer did not see it, the notoriously anemic Wake Forest offense, who outscored Tulane, was it 7-3 in the opener?
7-3 in the opener, yeah.
7-3 in the opener, setting a torrid pace.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, they scored 24 points, man. Slow down, Wake!
They scored 24 points. They had almost 400 yards of offense, scored three touchdowns on the ground.
Are they ill?
Had a 62-yard catch. I don't know how that happened. I don't necessarily have meaningful things to say about this, except I am excited to see Mr. Clausen get a job he is definitely not qualified for on the strength of, let's call it a 6-win Wake season.
Six wins at Wake, though, man. That'll get you a lot of jobs.
You know what?
I think we get him the Tennessee job.
You know what game is now looming is very interesting? Wake versus Army on October 29th.
Because Army...
Army's also 2-0. Army beat Rice. They're 2-0.
They got the Godfrey bump.
So
they did.
I just want you, if you are a fan of a team that's not 2-0, and that's a lot of you out there, including Jason's Cal Bears, you're worse than Wake and Army. Congratulations.
I thought you were going to tell all those folks to stop listening. All broke folks, get out the mentions.
yeah, only rich.
Oh,
folks
your team's not 2-0. Can't relate.
Yeah, don't know what.
Sorry.
Can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah.
Also we will mention, yeah, Cal lost to San Diego State. Boom. Yeah.
What do you got? Well, we already discussed this on Twitter. As noted, losses that count after AP voters are asleep do not actually count. So Cal is 1-0.
Sure.
I take pride in being the only Heisman voter who actually watches West Coast football. I dare you to prove me wrong.
Although
The evidence will be when like a Hawaii player has a Heisman vote.
The fact that Spencer is the only one who watches West Coast football is also why we didn't record this podcast on time today. So there's that.
That's true. It's definitely true. Because hey, it's not my fault that the Pac-12 plays really long football games and they kicked it 10.
They did.
Okay. They kicked it 10.
They did.
One of those games that kicked it 10. By the way, if we're just going to go ahead, also handing out plaudits. Kalen Ballage.
Whew. So many touchdowns.
All time college football record for times entering the end zone during a game. Tied it.
Yes, and he did it in one of my favorite fashions, which was vulturing credit yardage from a teammate. But, like, the best. Because they actually, like, Arizona State not only had him carrying the ball, but they had Richard carrying the ball as well.
Richard, yeah.
And he would, you know, take some of the carries. And then they just kept giving the ball to him because he's in the goal line. They have a package set up for him, and they just handed it off to him. It was like some serious great Mike Allstott style. In fact, Kalen Ballage only had 13 carries.
but thanks to a 75-yard run, he averaged 10.5 yards on those carries.
That's right. Demario Richard actually, like, Demario Richard had 30 carries. 30. Which, if man, that's a lot. Yeah, that is a lot. And he had zero TDs. They kept giving it to Plush at the goal line. That's my favorite. It's like, thank you for getting us this far. We're going to finish him off. Balazs, let's bring in Balazs for this. So, yeah. Nonetheless, a stellar record, a great achievement, even if you're doing it against Texas Tech. Remember, you can say that in college football. It's a great thing that you did, even if you were playing Texas Tech's defense when you did it. So, well done, Kalen Balazs. Also, I would like to shout out the Mighty Buffalo. I don't know if you've seen this, but if you're familiar with how bad Colorado has been, Colorado is 2-0 right now. With a win over bitter rival Colorado State, yes. And with the outmanned, I believe, Idaho State this week. But nonetheless, that's 2-0 Colorado. We're going to get to 6.
Your team might
We're going to get you to 6 wins. Idaho State, yes, they beat them 56-7. But Sefa Lefau, I'm already prepared. I've talked about this on Twitter before, but Sefa Lefau, I'm prepared to remember you as way better than you ever were just because I liked you. I love college quarterbacks like that. You're like, oh, man, that guy's incredible. Sefa Lefau, can't believe he wasn't successful in the NFL.
Also not 2-0, Arizona, although it's not because they lost this week. They just needed a... They just needed 28 unanswered points in the second half to beat Grambling by 10.
Nearly a banner day for HBCUs as North Carolina A&T knocked off Kent State in, I think, quadruple overtime after a lightning delay.
That sounds right, yeah.
That's the only way you're going to beat Kent State, son.
Yeah. You need lightning. You have to use the lightning against them. Yeah. Somehow they're weak against lightning. You'd never expect that.
Any other plaudits or positives before we move on to my favorite thing, Hayden?
Now let's just start hating.
Oh man, I have so much hate to direct toward Georgia. So much.
I have some defenses of Georgia to offer.
That's good because Georgia doesn't.
Woo, yeah. Woo! Yeah. Look at that dunk.
Yeah. I don't. Nick Chubb had 80 yards. Against Nichols.
Now, I know Nichols.
And
Nichols,
that's not like, oh, Nick Chubb played, you know, had 9 carries and then went out because he tweaked a hamstring or something. That's on that's on 20 touches.
Yeah, they needed him.
Yeah, formerly Nichols State, a place that does have, admittedly, transfers. People did make it out of the programs. Some unheralded local talent. Sure. Nichols State, formerly Nichols State. Has that, sure. At one point, they were leading Georgia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not a good FCS program, to be clear.
No. This is not Richmond beating UVA, right? This is not Eastern Washington beating Washington State. This is not you and I beating Iowa State. No. This is Georgia, ranked 9 in the country, struggling with the Nichols Colonels. And probably, by the way, like had they not had some quarterback issues, I don't know, might have won this game. Nick Chubb struggled.
I mean,
and
if Nichols gets a third down stop at the end of the game, they at least get a chance to kick a field goal and beat Georgia at home. I don't know, man.
We're not playing this at Nichols. By the way, this is in Athens.
Yeah. Just in case.
It was not a road game unclear. At the Nickel Dome.
Here's the defense to offer if you are a perplexed Georgia fan. 3 of the 4 Nichols scoring drives started at or inside the Georgia 30, and it's hard if you're a defense to keep a team off the board in that instance. That said, possession is not awarded by randomly throwing dice and deciding where a team is going to start. There is a reason they started with such wonderful field position on multiple drives, including late in the game. So there's also that. I really appreciate that it feels like nothing has changed at Georgia. I feel like I'm in an art heist movie, and this is where we're like, oh, this isn't a Mark Richt, but whoever did this is, like, copycatting him perfectly.
Yeah, we need to find this mastermind.
Look at the brushstrokes. You see? They're a little heavy, but it's definitely reminiscent of early Richt.
I definitely picture Kirby Smart as a heavy painter.
Not going to be
a lot of light dabbling.
Does this also go for who we always said Kirby Smart probably resembled more than anybody else? I don't know, barely beating inferior competition at home while struggling offensively.
Leaning on defense, yeah. Special teams didn't play super well, yeah.
Got the same haircut.
You got the same butt cut, even though you make millions of dollars a year, you still got a trash haircut. Hey, let's talk about South Carolina, Mississippi State. Yeah, that's right, Mississippi State lost to South Alabama last week.
You will see this in EDSBS, the magazine, which will be up by the time you see this podcast. South Carolina upped its offensive point total this week and yet lost instead of won. So I think the answer there is keep going down. Keep trying to, instead of trying to score more points, try to score fewer points and see if you can win 3-0. That happens. You can win 2-0.
I feel like South Carolina is in a game of Street Fighter 2 starting, or is it Mortal Kombat, where you start at the bottom and work your way up the ladder?
Yeah.
And, like, they found their ceiling already. They started with,
they beat Glassjaw Joe.
That's the best analogy, yeah.
Yeah.
They beat Glass Joe, and then they lost to the French guy. And, right. Okay, well, now you need the game, Genie, South Carolina, and you can't afford it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that would be, by the way, the score at half was 24-0. 24-0.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they put in Brandon McIlwain, and he's their running quarterback. And he was slightly better.
I did enjoy how many tweets Spencer and I got that were like, "Oh god, this is what it's like." We were like, "Yeah. Are Spencer and I melodramatic man babies? Absolutely. We weren't making shit up, though.
No.
I've watched Oregon games with Dan Rubenstein, and he'll piss and moan even if Oregon wins by 25 because they didn't win by 45. Because that's how he is, and that's fine. We didn't make up any of this shit. Like, I remember walking into the office to see that Florida needed to block a punt to beat Louisiana Lafayette at home. That sticks in my mind. I can never be rid of it.
I can't get it out.
Help me get it out.
We are cowards, and we lack fortitude and courage and the ability to endure. But you know what we are?
Like all podcasters.
That's right. But you know what we aren't? Inaccurate. No, that's how it's going to be. No one ever changes. Not liars.
No,
not liars.
There are inaccuracies on this program.
That's right.
There are several inaccuracies.
We did not run into that burning building to save those children, but we were right about how hot it was. It was very hot.
Exactly. It'll be truthy. Let me tell you, no one ever learns. No one ever improves. No one ever changes. And everyone keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. That's Will Muschamp at South Carolina. Enjoy it. It's going to suck.
It might also be Washington State.
Yeah, it might also be Washington State. Who they coughed up another. The end of this game, and I wrote a note to myself that I would try to explain this at one point to the rest of the world who fell asleep, that Washington State got the ball back with, God, they got the ball back with a lot of time at this, I want to say a minute, at least a minute and a half.
Which Washington State offensive time was like 2 days.
Well, to set it up, it was what did Boise State do? They had plenty of time to march down the field some more, and then they just fuck it, heaved it into the end zone, and everyone just said, "What the fuck was that? You've given Washington State all this time. What are they going
to
do with
it?" And got picked. Yeah, like all they needed to do was run the clock out, and instead Boise State heaved the ball up for no goddamn reason. They get picked. So Wazoo gets the ball back. Aha. Uh-huh. With 53 seconds, needing a field goal at their own 20 after the touchback.
Field goal, ample tie, touchdown to win, yep.
Touchdown to win, field goal, tie, 53 seconds, and 2 timeouts. Ample time to get this to happen. And at one point, Mike Leach just fell asleep.
What's really fun about this is if you look at the play-by-play on ESPN right now, it's totally borked. This is what it says. First and 10 at the Washington State 40, 53 seconds left. Washington State completes a pass for 8 yards. Second and 2, 53 seconds left still. They complete a pass again for 8 yards, get a first down. First and 10, 53 seconds left still. Complete pass for no gain. Second and 10, 53 seconds still on the clock. Pass incomplete. Third and 10, 53 seconds left on the clock. Pass complete for 9 yards. And then it says, with 4 seconds left on the clock, there's a Washington State timeout. So if you just go based on this, you're like, wow, Wazoo really was moving the ball quick. And then they let 49 seconds run off the clock for no reason after a 9-yard pass on first down.
Now, I will tell you, that's what it felt like. That's not accurate, but that's what it felt like. Because I actually thought, if you were watching the game, you thought Washington State was going to just let the clock run out without getting another play. And instead, they insanely they waste all of this time, let it run off, and then take a timeout with 4 seconds left. And then, the pip of all pips, there's a lot of discussion and argument. The refs go, no, I'm sorry. Can you reset it to 5? Reset it to 5. Not that 1 second doesn't make a difference, Alabama fans, but still.
Hey, 0 seconds makes a difference if you're an Oklahoma State fan, so.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But we will get there. Because Spencer, as bad as that was, it wasn't the worst clock management of Saturday. That honor belonged to
UConn.
Yeah, UConn. UConn, Boston College, the end of their game against Navy.
UConn just declined to win.
I mean,
they just got to the goal line and then said, actually, we're fine.
So
at the goal line, your options are with no timeouts, right?
With no timeouts, 17 seconds to play, second and goal at the Navy 1. Your options are spike it. You know, it doesn't help you, but it also doesn't hurt you because almost no time comes off the clock.
There's a lot of passionate discussion on whether you should or shouldn't do that. However, everyone agrees that it is an option, and it, yes, probably wouldn't have hurt you
here. You can do a fake field goal. It won't work because Navy will say, wait, there's no way you're actually kicking a field goal. But maybe, I don't know, it's interesting. It's worth trying.
Yeah, again, it's a stupid idea, but it's relatively harmless compared to what you could do.
Yeah, you could throw the ball as hard as you can into the stands. Also not productive, but won't likely run 17 seconds off the clock, and you'll get another shot. These are all terrible ideas, and they're better than what UConn did, which is run for no gain, and the clock just ran out. Just dwindled away.
Yeah. My favorite part of this, okay, is this. The game recap. Every now and then, by the way, you read a game recap, and you go, man, AP Stringer, whoever put this together, you did a magnificent job with, like, glorious understatement.
Oh, yeah, these are the people you want to speak at, like, your shitty uncle's funeral. Be like, well, Uncle David was a mean drunk, but there were times when he slept.
He was an uncharitable man, but...
But he was also poor.
He was also vindictive and poor. Yeah, this is it. UConn runs the play. The running back goes into the pile. He goes nowhere. And then, no lie, there is confusion. And at the 5-second mark, UConn just begins shuffling off the field. Like leaving. Like, oh, well. And this is the quote, okay? After Johnson, this is the UConn running back, was thrust into his own backfield, the midshipman had no intention of letting him return to the line of scrimmage.
Am I being detained?
We practiced that, linebacker Daniel Gonzalez said. You just lay on the guy until the ref pulls you off.
Well, here's
Huskies. I'm sorry, there's one thing you need to hear.
Yeah.
Huskies coach Bob Diaco was at a loss to explain what transpired on the Connecticut sideline during the game's final seconds. He talked about the uncertainty of where the ball was placed, whether a pass call was a better call than a run, you think? And then the timeout call because the play clock was about to expire. And I quote, I am not complaining or making excuses. I take full accountability. Diaco's just done with this.
Yeah, just sign the police report. Yep, it's my fault. I'll call the insurance company. You're right. here's what's super confusing about this. I could almost understand this if Connecticut had been running the ball all over Navy and they were sort of like, you know, we don't have a lot of confidence in our passing game. We feel like this is our best shot. Yeah, kind of is one shot, and it might fuck us in that regard. Even then, it's like, just pass it and you still have another down to run it on. But this is what Connecticut's offensive day was. Connecticut rushing, 34 carries for 90 yards. That's less than 3 yards a carry. Passing the ball, they went 24 of 27 for almost 10 yards a pass. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It's a good thing Bob Diaco's pretty.
Bob Diaco's super pretty, man.
Man, he is like Jimmy Garoppolo handsome. He's an extremely handsome man.
I have a question about a game.
Okay.
That I didn't see. Clemson. What the fuck?
Tomorrow
morning, around the time this up, Bill C. will have written sort of the... one perspective, but give me what y'all think.
I mean, the good news for Clemson is that it could have been worse. They turned the ball over 3 times in this game, and even though it was a close game, not a single point that Troy put up came off of turnovers. They had to earn all of them.
Yeah, and in addition to that, Troy got jobbed on a fumble return.
There was that.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically a 14-point swing at that point in a game where points were really hard to come by.
It was the Texas Iowa State thing, basically, from what, 2-3 years ago?
That bad?
No, I mean, it was roughly that bad, yeah, in terms of like what happened and whether or not the play was whistled dead and what should have trained. Yeah, it was close, I would say.
Also, I don't know if Watson's pressing or not, or if he just doesn't feel comfortable or what. But been a little sloppy, thrown like picks, and looks like he's pressing at times. Still capable of making beautiful throws, threw a beautiful touchdown pass. But Clemson's making mistakes like Ray-Ray McCloud. Ray-Ray McCloud totally did the I flip the ball at the 1 yard line.
The Deshaun Jackson, he did that. It was like as close as you can get without being in.
Yeah.
It was on a punt return. Here's what I think. I think Clemson was distracted because Troy's logo, the sort of like sword tee thing, looks like a golf tee. And they were all like, oh man, I'd love to get out there and just.
What I wouldn't give to be out on the links.
I got this new hybrid. I just love to just crack that puppy open.
Yeah, I could take the big birthday out there, maybe get a couple beers in me. Be good.
You know, my short game's gotten a lot better. Hell of a lot better. That's where you shave strokes, man. That's what Clemson was doing, going low.
I like the idea that Clemson players, upon commitment, like just immediately love golf. Like they go from like listening to Future to listening to Jimmy Buffett just immediately somehow.
I think they're still in the stage where they listen to Future on the golf course, right?
That sounds fine. I would do that. If I was ever on a golf course, I guess.
The good news is the Clemson defense is still really, really good.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's kind of a lot of points.
That's a lot of points. Man,
yeah,
no,
but they, I mean, they held, they, Troy went 2 of 15 on third down. Like, they did break one really nice play for a touchdown, but overall, I absolutely, through two games, if there's a side of the ball that I am not worried about at all for Clemson, it's the defense. The defense still looks really, really good.
I would also like to point out a couple of mediocrities. Virginia Tech, I know you're working on stuff. I know. It's underway. But man, after fumbling the ball a mess in their first game against Liberty, they did it again against Tennessee and just handed Tennessee. Like, Tennessee's got 45 points on the board, but if you check Bill C's analysis, Tennessee lucked out. They lucked out hard. They got the ball in good spots throughout this game. Josh Dobbs, do you happen to know how many passing yards he had?
91, I want to say.
91.
Yeah, on 19 attempts.
It was two for a really long time, right? I saw that tweet a lot.
It just...
Yeah.
I mean, I've worn this one out on Wake Up College Football already. Josh Dobbs is the senior that you're most like, man, this guy looks great for a sophomore.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you know, a couple more years with in this system, and he's really just going to get it clicking. He's got the pure athleticism. I mean, the way he runs the ball. Once he learns how to make the – I mean, is it possible – can Tennessee win a game where they have to throw the ball?
I don't think so. And honestly, watching Josh Dobbs run for his life against Virginia Tech, I feel really good about the Florida game. I do, like, straight up. I'm like, if he keeps throwing across his body and our defensive line is as good as I think they are and is, like, seven deep,
and the second,
he's
and
in
the
trouble.
And the secondary's good and ball hawking, and yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to do all that much on offense because they're just going to give you the ball.
I mean,
I like him. I'm worried.
I mean,
he's
between
gotten the crap beat out of him.
Between Florida, the road game at A&M, and they have some mean guys on the defensive line. Alabama, obviously. Like,
what, Myles Garrett?
Yeah.
Myles Garrett? No, that's a bad – that's – I don't want to see that. When you're like, oh, man, I want to watch Myles Garrett work on Josh Dobbs. No, I don't.
No, thanks.
No. Don't go. Save the money. Pull it's a weird. Kentucky on Alabama. Just
yeah.
Don't go to that.
It's weird. I mean, I will say Tennessee's offensive line played better. And the defense,
run block.
The defense is still pretty solid. Yeah, Jalen Hurd is still a nightmare. It's basically like, hey, go tackle this Ford Arrow star. Cool, have fun.
Yeah, Jalen Hurd is painful. He's a great running back.
But this offense is still so one side. I don't know, man. I question
Dobbs,
how they can do this.
Yeah, and how many turnovers did Virginia Tech have in this game? They had
five.
Five to Tennessee's one. So is this result indicative of anything? No, Virginia Tech's going to be real good come November when they actually get their ball hand. Like, they were pulling stuff on that. Like, they were pulling stuff like not having their ball handling down, right, on, like, basic fakes and motions and stuff. That'll fall in line. If they didn't have five turnovers, I'm pretty sure Virginia Tech would have won this game. That's a big statement when you go, well, if they didn't have five turnovers, right? But they looked, a lot of times, they looked like a team with, like, more potential. With Tennessee, you go, Josh Dobbs is still throwing full flat across his body and not well. Not like Pat Mahomes, where you're like, that's all they've got. He can throw across his body, and you just do it because he's an improv wizard, and you let him do it, and that's the kind of offense you play. No, Dobbs is just heaving, like, arm punts across the field. And that won't work. That won't work considering they play two teams I know can make them pay for that. And that's Florida. Oh, and Alabama. God. Yeah. This was not, by the way, the coolest part about this game was Bristol, because when you watch what was on the field, you're like, I just see trouble for both of these teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's without a race going on around the track as a massive missed opportunity, as I understand.
Let's talk about what the hell happened with Central Michigan and Oklahoma State.
Yeah, so rules are rules, except when they're not, because they got a free play. And as I've always said, don't give Central Michigan a free play.
That's true.
Because they'll take advantage of it.
Those were John Quincy Adams' dying words.
Yeah.
So this was Maction Refs with hashtag Big 12 Refs replay booth? Is that the combo?
That is correct, yes.
That is deadly.
Yeah. And they totally, I mean, this is a surprisingly multi-layered thing, because if you didn't watch it, it's hard to explain. On their last offensive play of the game, Oklahoma State, leading by four, I believe at that point, throws the ball, just drops back, throws the ball as high and as far out of bounds as they can on fourth down. Clock expires while the ball is in the air. It is ruled rightly intentional grounding, and the refs confer, and they say, well, because the game cannot end on a accepted penalty by the, I guess, by the defense in this case, that means Central Michigan should get the ball and should get an untimed down. That was wrong, according to the letter of the rule, right?
Yes.
Whatever they said on the field was wrong, yeah.
Whatever they said on the field was wrong. And they immediately admitted so afterwards. And the Big 12 replay comes in because this is one of the limited areas in which they have the, I guess, authority to step in and tell the MAC officials, hey, you screwed it up. And it's not, they're actually not supposed to get a play here at all. It is a little weird because it does seem odd that Oklahoma State can intentionally end the game on a penalty. That's not usually, the rules are usually written to specifically preclude that. But that is the rule, and they fucked it up bad. They fucked it up real bad.
It almost feels like they got the spirit of the rule right then, right? I mean, the letter of the rule is wrong, but...
There's that, and there's... I mean, look, there is also the fact that, yes, if Oklahoma State manages to actually defend this hook and this deep hook and ladder Hail Mary, which was awesome to watch live, especially because everybody, including Central Michigan's official Twitter account, had already said, oh, the game is over, and Oklahoma State won. It was great to watch, but if they stop that play, we are having this conversation in a much different context. That's a cop-out, but it's true. Here's the other thing. If you didn't watch this game, the go-ahead touchdown for Oklahoma State was, I believe, scored on fourth and goal from like the two or the three or something. A flag was thrown for holding, and then I saw something I can't recall seeing in any college football game. The officials huddled, talked for, you know, 30 seconds, and then picked up the flag for holding. I don't know how or why that happens. I don't get it at all.
Also, maybe these were, like, intern refs.
Well, no college credits for them.
Just send them to Stillwater. Nobody will notice. It'll be fine.
The Hail Mary hook and lateral play, it was the exact same to the quarterback and tall receiver who caught it and lateraled it, the same from the Bahamas Bowl Hail Mary two years ago. Roger Sherman pointed that out today. I think if you're playing CMU at this point, you should know what's coming.
This is just proof, by the way, that excellent starts at the Bahamas Bowl. And it just moves forward. What former participant
PJ Fleck knows that. PJ Fleck knows that.
Living proof of that, although
that Northwestern win does go down in value this week, unfortunately. So,
God damn it. PJ Fleck's playoff value is sinking. Northwestern.
So here's the thing I don't understand. The conventional wisdom seems to be, well, you can't overturn the result because this is just how it works, and yeah, the refs fucked up, and it wasn't even like a judgment fuck up. It was a you read the book wrong fuck up. But everything stands. Central Michigan wins. If Central Michigan tomorrow we were like, oh, it turns out their quarterback was academically ineligible, everybody will be like, well, then that result can't stand at all. I mean, we have to give that win to Oklahoma State. It's very fucking strange to me how this is a sport where so many teams throughout its history have seen wins change to losses.
And this is like if you were actually like if you weren't covered by insurance for a surgery you died during,
right.
You got to come back or you couldn't come back, but like if the doctor committed malpractice, they're like, nope, sorry.
Yep.
We'll bring you back. It's fine.
It's just odd. I mean, we took a damn Heisman Trophy away from somebody. But when the refs bungle something this badly, we're like, nope, sorry. The result is pure and perfect, and we can't. It's not even like to me. It's not the Duke Miami ending because that was a bunch of judgment calls that they fucked up. This shouldn't have happened. It was hilarious. Well, yeah,
I'm always okay with. You know, that was probably the wrong call, but the outcome was side splitting.
Yeah.
Just gonna let it stand.
This is a sport with many inconsistencies, including like when a game actually counts or not. Those of us who think anything that happens on the field is sacred and should count no matter what would oppose rescinding wins later on. It would also say, hey, if the refs fucked up, that's part of the game. Weather happens, fumbles happen, injuries happen. If refs are terrible, I mean, I don't know. I guess you should have scored more points earlier.
I just wonder, is there any level of fuck up where it would be so egregious that we would say, no, that doesn't count? Like, if a running back ran into the end zone without the ball, he never had the ball in the first place, and the refs signaled touchdown, Would we be like, and on replay, they were like, yeah, we're upholding it. There's not enough evidence to overturn the fact that he didn't have the ball.
See, I was
And there are people pointing at the ball back at the 10.
Right. Like, at that point, would we say, no, that's too far?
No, that sounds... I mean, I think if that happened, we would do a really good post on it and get a lot of traffic.
I always wanted to call a play where you threw the Hail Mary, and no matter what happened with the Hail Mary, right? A guy celebrated like he had caught it, and then threw his shoe in the stands like it was the ball, just to see if you could ball fake the ref into signaling touchdown, and then just run off a field. Just choreograph it.
So the whole bench sprints after that guy and chases him into the locker room. Like,
yeah, exactly. And you get on the
coach,
bus, and you
your coach
go.
Is pre-doused. Like, your coach douses himself in Gatorade, and the refs look at the coach like, well, I mean, Kentucky's not in this game. They wouldn't. Who would prematurely douse a coach if not Kentucky?
Listen, they were confident. I just went with them. They carried themselves like they won. That should count.
The most
important
part of
my favorite rule proposal, which is like when it's a dead ball foul or something like, you know, where it was this a pass or a fumble? Just go with what the players think happened. Mm-hmm. Like, if we don't know if it was an incompletion or a fumble, well, did the players run and pick up the ball? Like, did they all, you know, in their course of immediate analysis, did they think the ball was live? Then okay, it's live.
It's very philosophical. It's reality is what we all agree it is.
Yeah.
My favorite part of this play is that we need somebody to be the ball thief. We need somebody to take the actual ball and hide it. So you need one person who's immediately going to take that ball and then disappear. Just leave the premises, right?
Do you just have a large lineman fall on it? And yeah, just lay on it, pretend he's cramping. And he wins the Heisman.
Yeah, I would give him the Heisman for that. Can I close with maybe the least and most important game of the week, which is Alabama committing the most penalties it has committed in 3 years?
Ooh,
yeah. Which
I think Saban's lost control of program discipline. Could be the end of the dynasty.
Pretty sure. Might want to step
well,
it up.
This one. I mean, look, they brought in Sarkisian. Look what happens.
Mm.
Right out the window there.
USC East here.
This was a game. This was a game where
I like how that's not South Carolina.
Fight on! But yeah, this was Nick Saban saying that this was as unhappy as he's ever been after a victory. This was a 38
high bar. First of all,
yeah, that's a high bar. This was for second of all. This was a 38-10 win over like a Western Kentucky offense. That's awesome.
This is a win that will boost your playoff resume by the end of the season, and he's unhappy about the 28-point win.
Furious. So furious that he completely tore Lane Kiffin a new one on the sidelines, which of course, everyone immediately begins to wonder and conspiratize about, you know, oh man, what's he saying to Lane Kiffin? I'm like, well, he's probably telling him how bad he is at his job.
He's calling him an asshole. Yeah.
After the game, they said, what were you discussing or arguing? And he said, we weren't arguing anything. I was chewing his ass.
Which, there's a visual for you.
it might have been. It's also West Virginia for, you know, just chewing ass.
I do enjoy this, that when you knock out a quarterback and you're Alabama, they don't say that he knocked him out. They say this, Western Kentucky quarterback Mike White left late in the third quarter. Like, bye.
Oh, I got a thing. I got a test in the morning.
Yeah, this is, have you seen what they're doing out there? That's enough of that.
Listen, man.
I'll be over here.
Listen, early exit was good enough for Brandon Harris.